Hello, everybody, and welcome to So What Happens Next, Small Screens. I am one of your hosts, Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And this week, we are bringing you back to the animated world of Japan in this week's Princess Mononoke. Today.
Doing good.
Yeah. You ready to talk about Princess Mononoke?
Oh, yes. I feel like I've seen it 100 times, so it's like I know word for word.
And that makes one of us, because I think I have not seen this movie until I met you. Like, I was aware vaguely that it existed, but I could probably count on one hand how many times I've seen this movie. And some of you may be like, wait a minute, guys, didn't you just do a small screens episode? Thomas, Amber, what the hell, bro? No. Okay. We get that. But after this episode, we'll be taking a little break, and we'll be coming at you with a bunch of main feed stuff over the course of the next month, which we will talk about at the end of this episode. So stay tuned to the end of this episode if you want to know more about what we have coming down the line for you in May. But anyway, let's talk anime. So, Princess Mononoke is a film by the illustrious Hayao Miyazaki, and it came out in 1997. Amber, this, I think you and I talked, I don't think we were on the air when we talked about it at all, but, you know, we kind of talked loosely about what our favorite, like, Miyazaki movie would be. And I was a little shocked that I think you said this was yours, right? This was your top Miyazaki pick.
Yeah.
Why? Like, not that it's bad. I think this movie's great, but I remember thinking something like, oh, it's going to be, you know, Spirited Away or something like that.
Well, my sister and I grew up with Studio Ghibli since we were young kids, and that's all we watched. Like, it was just Studio Ghibli movies. So, like, Spirited Away.
They were weebs since the womb. King
Leopold! Yes. Kiki's Delivery Service, like all those other ones that are, they're good, but they're also geared more towards children. And I don't think it was until later on that we were introduced to Princess Mononoke, because there's a lot more adult themes to it, especially in this one. There's a lot of things that, like, you have to think about. And obviously, there's, if you have watched Ghibli films directed by Hayao Miyazaki, then you know that one of the things he likes to talk about is this idea of, like, man versus nature.
Mm-hmm.
And how a lot of times, like, humans corrupt things that are, you know, within the natural order of things by, you know, industrialization and things like that. And so this movie kind of hit me like it was a lot more human, I felt like, than a lot of the other films that were very, like, you know, fantasy, you know, and things like that. Right. And not necessarily real. It was just kind of like all made up.
It's a fake.
So when it comes to things such as, like, Spirited Away, I mean, I know it's such an easy, like, I don't mean target so much, because I think Spirited Away is a phenomenally good Studio Ghibli
it is
movie.
It's a good, like, coming of age story, I would say.
Right. And I think it deals a lot with the themes you talked about that this movie Princess Mononoke deals with, but it definitely does them lighter. And I think another one, like, by extension of that a little bit too, is, like, My Neighbor Totoro, where you have that there's that constant juxtaposition that Miyazaki does where it's like nature versus urbanized area, which I think is, like, a really big, I mean, it's a huge theme, like, especially in Japan, right? Like, you can see that when you look at even just pictures of Japan, or you're in Japan, there is this sprawling urban center that is Tokyo that just goes on for miles and miles and miles and miles. Mm-hmm. And then you have, like, these sudden nature areas. And I think there's definitely a very stark juxtaposition there. I think the interesting thing that this movie does, though, that you pointed out here, is that it does have this kind of more human element to it. It's not so much something like Castle in the Sky the way I look at it, which I guess we're going to talk a little bit about other Ghibli movies since we're here. But just because there's just so little to compare this to without being overly critical of those other things. But I think this movie, when you compare it to something like Castle in the Sky, where it's just very clear, like, oh, nature's the way to go. Like, the peak of technology is just this terrible thing, this horrible weapon, right? And then it gets reclaimed by nature in this beautiful place. This actually had, like, a grounded element, I think, to it, where they're talking about, you know, you meet the people that live in the Iron Towns, or the Iron Town, or whatever, and they're like, oh, it's great. Before this, we were, like, stuck being, you know, prostitutes or slaves and stuff like that. Yeah. And this woman comes in, and she's like, yo, just join me, like, help me make this iron stuff, and I'll feed you, I'll take care of you, I'll make everything good. And, like, their lives got better, but at the cost of which nature suffered.
Yeah, like, you see it from both sides, especially with the gods of the forest, mm-hmm. so to speak. So you have, like, the boar, and then you have the wolves, and you see it from their perspective, where their entire home is being destroyed, and then you also see, like, the humans' homes are also being destroyed, mm-hmm. as a result of this conflict, and then, you know, the human to human conflict that's also occurring, because a lot of political things are, like, going on as well. I think they kind of touch upon it, but they don't really get into it. Like, Lady Yaboshi is in a constant battle with, like, other lords of the land who want to take over Iron Town.
Yeah, it's very, I think the closest equivalent I could think of is sort of like the shogunate era Japan, historically, where you have, like, an emperor, but he's just emperor in name, and, like, people respect him and let him be emperor in the pseudo capital, while, you know, in the meantime, you have the shogunate and the shogun.
Yeah.
You know, the leader of that, and it's sort of this feudal system where you have this head big honcho boss, and you have a bunch of little, you know, tiny lords and whatnot, and of course she's one of them, and they're fighting amongst each other to gain power and land and stuff. As long as they answer to the big guys and respect the emperor from afar, they're cool. And I think that's what you get here, right? She's kind of on this, it reminds me so much of the television series Into the Badlands a little bit, because, like, the female, I guess, equivalent of this character, Lady Yaboshi's, like, counterpart in that show is this woman whose, like, goal is, like, I'm going to conquer the Badlands because I want to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of leads down this path of, like, oh, I'm making it worse because I'm killing. Yeah. Like, at some point, you're causing more damage to achieve your goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this movie really does a good job showing kind of everybody but our main boy, Ashitaka, is kind of bad in their own way.
But you're all terrible at what you do here. And I feel like I should tell you, I'd fire all of you if I could.
You know, like, I think, so let's kind of back up a minute and let's just talk. So, spoilers for this movie, if you haven't seen it, I highly suggest you go watch it. Just straight out of the top, I'll say definitely watch this movie. It's very good. But straight out of the gate, you're kind of introduced to this boy named Ashitaka. And he rides this, like, bitchin'-ass deer horse thing, which I think visually there's so much you could just dissect in that when you get to, like, the forest spirit later and everything, and how it's personified as a deer, and he rides a deer, and, like, his people are kind of one with nature.
Yeah, like, he comes from a small village, mm-hmm. versus, like, coming from a more industrialized city.
Right.
And it seems like his people are very much with nature, and so they kind of understand the laws of nature, and that, you know, the gods and demons, they all, like, dwell in this forest, and they kind of keep to themselves.
Right.
And it's very Nausicaä Valley of the Wind. Like, that's one aspect that keeps repeating itself over and over again. Mm. It's just, like, humans are separate from, you know, nature. Like, they can live amongst it, but they have to respect it, because otherwise, like, it becomes unbalanced and a lot of horrible things happen. So in this case, for him, he becomes inflicted with this, like, curse/disease or whatever.
Yeah.
And he basically has to, and he's, like, the prince of the village too, which was,
that's right.
That's where the human, you know, aspect of it comes in, but they basically banish him.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to, he goes on this quest basically to figure out, okay, like, is there a way that I can, like, relieve myself of this curse?
Yeah, so he fights a boar, right? Like, it's like a god of the forest, though, right?
Used to be god of the forest that has now become a demon.
Right, and it's just disgusting. I think there's very good visuals in Miyazaki films of when bad things in the films are supposed to disgust you,
mm-hmm.
they do. In this case, it's like imagine worms just wriggling out of the skin of a boar. I mean, it's literally like decaying, but it's like almost like a zombie. It's feral. You know, it went from being this deity to a monster. And it's like a giant boar. It's not just like a 2 foot tall pig or something like that. They were talking like the size of a van. And it comes barreling into their village, and it's just like, I think you get a great example of his character, because he rides up next to it on his deer thing, and he's like,
"Oh, please don't kill us! Please don't kill us! You know I love you, baby!
Hey, please don't, you know, disrupt our village. We didn't do anything to you. Please just go back to the forest. Everything's okay." Instead of like, because we were shown that he's like a good hunter and stuff. He has his bow and arrow and things like that. And he doesn't like lay a finger on this thing until it's like gonna kill the people in the village. And that's where it infects his arm, and he's got these like nasty black lesions that also make him super strong too when he gets angry.
Yeah, it gives him like
phenomenal cosmic powers.
It gives him these demonic powers that when he becomes like, you know, angry or is filled with hate, like it just starts like going out of control and actually takes like a mind of his own, like the arm, yeah. Which is kind of crazy. It's very Rick and Morty.
Yeah, if it's like the, yeah, it's like the episode of Rick and Morty where Morty gets the strong arm. It's that. He at first it starts where it's clear like this, and I think it's so interesting because it's like, it's very fluid. Like, he is into this I'm gonna beat the piss out of you thing, right? Like, especially when he's shooting arrows at people, and it's just this arm is giving him that extra strength to pull it back and let it go, and it just is ripping people's arms off, literally.
Yeah.
And then he kind of like comes to his senses, and he's like, "Oh fuck, this is a bad idea." But his arm is still like, "Nope, we got some killing to do," and he has to grab it and like hold himself down. And basically, they banish him from this town, or his village, and they say, "You know, go." Very, it reminded me kind of like Horizon Zero Dawn, but in like the negative, like. Instead of being like, which I've just been playing recently, so like maybe that's what it reminded me of. But when brief spoilers for that, but when they're like, "Aloy, go become the thing that'll allow you to explore in the game, you know, go out and figure this shit out for us," and kind of a low key, like, "Don't come back until you do." That's kind of what it felt like to me, because they're like, "Look, you can't be here anymore. We gotta banish you. But like, we give you our blessing to go figure this out. And maybe if you do come home," is kind of what I feel like is like understood. Like, if you figure this out, sure, but the reality is you won't figure it out. And I think it's just, there's so many layers to this where it's like the boar is infected by like an iron ball from a gun, and his people don't really get what this thing is. They just know it's a piece of metal or something. They're like, "This is what infected him." And I think it's kind of that like Star Trekian first contact issue, right? Where it's like, "Whoa, what is this strange..." If you've ever seen The Gods Must Be Crazy, it's the glass Coke bottle. Is, "Oh my god, this like harder than anything we could possibly make ball infected. What is this amazing technology?" And then that's sort of the poison, right? Like the poison is like, "Oh, well, knowledge, we figured it out. And now our, you know, nice balanced life has changed because now we need to harvest these resources and make this metal and improve our own lives," which is what Ashitaka sees when he goes out and like goes to the Iron Town and everything and sees all the people out there wearing armor and all this stuff. And even Billy Bob Thornton. So we're talking about the English dub of this film, by the way. I just realized that's a thing to mention. We're talking about the English dub of this movie. At least because that's the only version I've seen. Amber, have you ever seen the Japanese dub? When you grew up with this, were you watching the English one, or were you watching? Okay.
Yes. So yeah, like Howl's Moving Castle, like you have Christian Bale and like Billy Crystal.
"I'm on the cover of a magazine." Ow!
As like the fire.
The cast in these movies is insane.
And like I think in a couple other ones, like I don't know if it's Kiki's Delivery Service, but Anne Hathaway, like they have some good actors and actresses voicing these characters.
Yeah, and they're like not doing just like, they're not phoning it in either. Like, I think as in like the most closest to phoning it in way is maybe Michael Keaton and Pogo Rosso, or Porco Rosso. But even that, like, it fits the character so well that it doesn't even feel like he's just like, I'm just showing up for a paycheck. Like, it's like, and I think like maybe even that just kind of like worked out.
Yeah, because these movies, they were literally like Disney movies. Like, yeah. If you were to do a voiceover for a Disney animated movie, like, you would definitely, I mean, now it's a little bit different, but I think back then, like, it was like a great honor, you know, to do that. And I think for, you know, to do it for Hayao Miyazaki, that was like a big thing.
Right.
And they were becoming very popular.
Also, these movies were distributed at least at some point in their history by Disney.
God of an evil corporation.
So yeah, when they got the dubs, I think Disney was doing the dubs, so you got Disney money to play around. They're like 90s Disney money. So we're like coming off of like, you know, Lion King and shit. We're coming into that golden age where Disney's just like, yeah, we got money to fuck around with. Let's throw, you know, in this movie, you got like Billy Bob Thornton, you got Jada Pinkett Smith, Gillian Anderson plays a wolf in this movie.
Joe DiMaggio.
Yeah, if you don't know who that is, you know.
Bite my shiny metal ass.
he's Bender in Futurama, among tons of other stuff. I mean, you have like a really killer cast of both like famous actors and actresses, and then like those people, the people who do all the voices of your childhood at the same time. Like, I've noticed when we're watching animated movies or television series, like looking at the casts of these Miyazaki films, the dubs, I'm like, holy shit, you got like John DiMaggio and like all, you know, Billy West, all these people are doing these films. And it's like, oh, you've done like pick a cartoon you grew up with. Yeah. Right. So it's definitely solid casting in these films. What I was originally going to say is that Billy Bob Thornton's in this movie and he plays kind of this traitor guy. And I think one of the interesting things to sort of deal into that dichotomy kind of message we see here is that Ashitaka's like shooting people with shooting these like bad samurai guys with like stone headed arrows, like napped stone arrows. And Billy Bob Thornton's like, wow, you know, I've only heard of this one tribe, his, who uses these, you know, it's like almost a myth at this point that people would use stone arrowheads to do anything. And it's just like, we all use metal now. We're all way past stone. And it's so interesting that, like, I feel like Miyazaki's trying to put out, like, hey, living with nature in terms of, like, this reality and perhaps even a commentary on our own is, like, almost mythical.
Amazing! This is just like magic!
To the average person.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not, you just can't. It's a thing of the past that maybe didn't even exist. And it's so interesting to see how it's displayed in this film. More so, in my opinion, than some of his other ones.
Yeah. And I think that's where it gets interesting to see the dichotomy between Ashitaka, the wolf girl whose name...
San.
Yeah, San. Her name escapes me, sorry. Yeah. And then Lady Eboshi, because like Lady Eboshi and San are like on two opposite sides of the spectrum, like both very extreme, because they both like hate each other and hate, you know, each other's guts. And then you have Ashitaka, who's a little bit naive, to be honest, like, you know, coming from like a small village where, you know, like, I'm sure like there were things like, you know, he respected, like, especially like this idea of like nature and everything, but I just felt like he took things, you know, for granted. And until he was kind of banished and like out on his own, like, he knew how to do that, but I think just seeing like how the rest of the world lives, like, I don't think he like really knew, like, you know, the people from Irontown, like the way that they lived before, like how horrible it was for them. And then, like, you know, seeing this like Lady Eboshi, who is like basically commander
of
Iron Town and like the, you know, military there, like, that's not normal, you know, with the lady being in charge. And then also with like San, just like with her backstory and how she was raised by wolves, like, yeah, it just kind of like gives an interesting dichotomy between the three of them.
Absolutely. I mean, Ashitaka's he's your Journey to the West character. He's Goku.
Yeah.
He's Kid Goku at the beginning of Dragon Ball. He meets Bulma and is like, "What the fuck? You're inside this metal monster." And she's like, "Bitch, I'm going to shoot you. That's my car." Like, yeah. And he's like, "What the hell? Like, what, you know, there's this whole learning thing." So like but I think the way Miyazaki does it in this film is like Ashitaka isn't just ignorant stupid Goku walking around learning with the viewer, right? He's wise in what he knows. So when it comes to like nature and like balancing the two, he like is very clear, like, you know, I know what I'm doing. When we get introduced to San in the Iron Town, like, it's this whole attack thing, and he stops them because he's like, this is not what you want to do. Like, you don't want to do this. All right, I'll deal with this, and like takes her away. And I think it's interesting because you're not dealing with like the standard, like, I don't know anything. So then every other character you meet is just an exposition dump about your world. You have someone who like is aware, but they're being introduced to this new shit and sort of this new, not so much a new conflict as much as it is just like the opposite of how they resolved what could have been a conflict, right? Like, his people live with nature. They don't have the conflict because their resolution before even having it was just, why don't we live with the land? These other people are button heads. And I think, like, let's move into talking about San for a minute, because we haven't quite talked about her at all. The, like, human-hating human who believes herself to be a wolf because she was raised by Gillian Anderson. who plays a wolf. That wasn't any kind of jab at anybody. But, yeah, it's such a strange, like, way they frame it, because she's like, I hate humans, they're terrible. And no one really bothers to pop that bubble
until Ashitaka comes, and he's like, at the very end, he's like, you know, San, like, you are human, and you can hate them all you want, but you are one of us,
right? And I think maybe there's another commentary there about like war and like otherization, because like Lady Eboshi and everybody in the town are perfectly fine viewing San as a wolf. They're like, it's arguably, it almost seems like for them it's way easier to just view her as an animal, because then it's nothing to shoot her like any other dog, right? And I think it's so interesting that they're just like, fine, whatever, like, let it be. But you're not doing some, like, which is great in all honesty, you're not doing some like stupid little Tarzan thing where she's trying to like run with the wolves, like, she just rides her siblings, quote unquote, you know, into battle and shit like that. And it's cool. Like, it's cool. She's an interesting character, because it's not, for a movie called Princess Mononoke, it's not really about San's character in so much as it's, oh God, I don't even know. If you had to pin down who's the main character in this movie, who is it?
I don't think there really is a main character. I would say maybe Ashitaka, because we're seeing everything from like his point of view. But to be honest, like, I think it's just all encompassing. Like, it's all of them all at once. And then, you know, with the forest spirit, you know, being at the top, basically.
Yeah. Let's talk about the forest spirit.
Oh my goodness.
I fucking hate this thing. And if it didn't destroy the world, it probably deserves to die.
Why would you say something so controversial yet so brave?
So the main crux of this film is that Lady Eboshi wants to, like, kill the forest spirit, right? And is like, if I kill the forest spirit and the forest isn't a problem anymore, I can, you know, take all of its resources for my own and all that good shit. Take over the world with all the resources of the forest. And of course, like, all the pigs, like, go fight her. And of course, the humans kick the pigs' asses, which corrupts one of the pigs, and blah, blah, blah. In the meantime, the emperor, which is such a, I don't want to say dropped thread, because it does come to fruition, like, as part of the plot, but it's such a low-key thing when, like, Billy Bob Thornton's like, oh yeah, the emperor put out this basic, like, bounty on the forest spirit because he wants to be immortal. Like, there's this whole sub, like, F plot where the emperor is like, oh, somebody told me that if I get the head of the forest spirit, I'll become immortal. Like,
yeah.
no, that's it. That's all you got. And so he's like, okay, if you get it, I'll give you fuck tons of money. So that's kind of like...
Yeah, and I'll pardon you because you are literally desecrating.
Yeah, like, you're doing some shitty stuff. Like, you're killing God, but yeah. It'll be okay because I'll be immortal. So we're cool. I'll give you money and a pardon. And that's like Billy Bob Thornton, among other characters, kind of drive. Like, Lady Eboshi just wants it dead. Billy Bob Thornton just wants the head to get the money. And I think you have two sides of human greed or whatever you want to call it there. But... The forest spirit is this entity that looks like a horrific deer with dinosaur feet. Google pictures of this thing. We'll probably use one in a social media post later in the week. But this thing is like a person's face on a deer body that has like emu legs.
You're right.
It's terrifying. And then at night it turns into this big jelly Godzilla.
Yeah.
Which is far more palatable than the deer thing. But the whole bit is that it, in its jelly form, it's immortal, right? It can't be killed. Yeah. And then as a deer, it can be killed.
I mean, it fucks. It sucks life. Yep. That's basically it.
Yeah. It
sucks life and gives life.
It's so fucking uncomfortable watching it like heal and kill things because it just like walks around and it looks at you like with a smile on its face and like around it all the trees begin to decay. And I'm just like, am I supposed to like you? Like,
yeah.
And I think maybe that's the point, right? Like, it's scary. It's nature. It's beautiful and horrible at the same time, right? Like, a forest can be beautiful, but a hurricane is terrifying. So, like...
Yeah, and even when they do kill it, that was the most horrifying point to where it just turned into this, like, gelatinous blob that basically sucks the life out of you if it touches you.
With no head.
Yeah, with no end.
It's headless jelly Godzilla that sucks the life out of everything.
Yeah, and I was like, there's no way to escape that. Like, as they're trying to escape with the head, I'm like, you may get to the Emperor, but by the time you get there, it's like everything's gonna be decimated,
right? Like no one's being immortal.
Human extinction is just like that's the end of the road.
And I think that's where this movie maybe gets a little blunt in its message, where it's just like, you fuck up nature, nature's gonna fuck you up. It's like, yes, I get it now. Like, I liked when it was nuanced, just because like it felt not ambiguous. Like, the message there, don't fuck around with nature, it's gonna mess you up. But like, it felt so much more human, like you said. Like, I actually care about the former prostitutes and fishermen or whoever they were, or their husbands, essentially, who live in the Iron Town. Like, I felt like I cared about them because they aren't like, yeah, fuck nature, man. Like, a piece of shit. They're just like, oh, these wolves and these boars constantly attack us.
Yeah.
And, like, all we want to do is have a good life. And they even go so far as to say, Lady Eboshi's like, with the biggest irony, right? She has all these lepers, like, in the, like, kind of cordoned off in her Iron Town, and they make her guns. And it's, like, such a strange thing to try to reconcile, is, like, she's giving these people who would be cast out of any society a, like, really nice-ass place to live.
Yeah.
And giving them, like, fine food and, like, just comfortable life. But has them making weapons, right? And it's just such a strange... I mean, it's kind of like manipulative almost on her part in a way, where it's like, okay, I'm doing these nice things for these suckers and they'll do whatever I want. But at the same time, you're like, wouldn't you? I mean, if someone was like, hey, you have nothing, you don't have a home, you don't have food, you're barely alive, come hang with me, you maybe occasionally have to make me weapons and or make things to make weapons, but I'll take care of you. Like, yeah. It kind of highlights something interesting about just like society in general and what, you know, the need, how people need to do things to survive. And it's just so interesting to see that in a film where, from a person who's constantly just like, nature is the way to go, everybody. And it's just like, yeah, but this is so much more like, I don't want to call it convoluted in a negative way, but there's a lot more moving parts to this one, I think, than some others. But yeah, they get the head at a certain point, like Amber pointed out, and they put it in a box and they're running away with it, and it just doesn't fucking work out because it keeps killing everything.
Yeah.
And then they give it its head back and everyone's sort of good. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I was surprised that like this god, if you want to call him,
yeah,
like, was like, okay, like, I will, you know, lift your curse, Ashitaka. I will make everything okay. And actually, he ends up dying, the spirit of the forest. So, yeah, he actually ends up dying, I'm pretty sure, at the end. But he blesses the land with life, basically. Yeah. And I was surprised, because if I were a god like that, I'd be like, you guys just tore off my head. I would
Nausicaa this shit. Yes. Like, okay, you want to come in the forest again? You'll choke to death.
Yeah.
Like, you know, don't come near my plants.
Don't you ever do that again!
Yeah, let's talk about this ending. Because, like, I'm a little curious. So I've only ever seen this movie as an adult.
Yeah.
Like, and to me, of course, every time I watch it, there's another, you know, interpretive layer after interpretive layer, like all of these films. But you watched this as a kid growing up. So, like, what were you thinking of this film when you were a kid? Like, overall, was it just like, cool, this like kick ass San girl, like beating up bad guys? And at the end of the day, it's because this movie doesn't end very Disney.
No, it doesn't.
It kind of just stops.
Yeah. And I think since I was so young, I didn't understand all of it. And like you said, it was like San was like the hero of the story. And everybody else, including Lady Eboshi, was like bad. Like bad people. And like, you know, the animals are in the right and everything. But now that I look at it, I think it's like both of them are wrong. Like both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have here like Lady Eboshi just trying to like, you know, survive basically, and like her people trying to survive, and then you have the animals also trying to survive as well. And it just leads to this like almost stupid conflict between the two, because the animals think they're above the humans, which is actually really interesting.
The animals have that, like, not just superiority complex, but they have a similar sentiment of, like, the humans need to die.
Yeah, and, like, even the apes are just like, we need to take back our land.
They
want to
eat the people.
Yeah.
They want to eat. I always forget about the fucking apes.
Like, we are descended from apes, so.
It's so weird. Every single time I've seen this film, I forget that the apes are characters until they come on screen, and my knee-jerk reaction is to go, what the fuck are those? Because they don't look like apes.
No.
They're like these ape spirit things, and there's one point where they try to petition, I think, Gillian Anderson to like let them eat the humans so they can turn into humans or something like that, and I'm just like,
like gain their powers.
Okay.
And they were just like, that's not how it works. Like, you can't just eat a human and like gain their like strength or whatever.
Right.
Like,
it's weird.
Yeah.
It's like if in the Jungle Book, King Louie just wanted to eat Mowgli to learn how to gain fire. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You're not fucking Kirby, man. You know? Like, you. It's such a strange, because the apes are there and done. I don't think they do really anything in this film.
No, they're almost like the dumber.
They're like a nuisance.
Yeah,
they like yell and throw rocks, and people are like, it's the apes again, go get to killing. And I'm just like, what the fuck is the point of this? But, you know, maybe it's some, I haven't watched it enough, I guess, to get that. But I think you're definitely right, because in the sense that there's like no, like everybody's wrong, like you said, like, the animals are the other extreme. I think that's kind of the interesting thing. I think that's the reason I think this is so interesting to me, is like Ashitaka is true neutral.
Yeah.
Right. And then you have the animals being one extreme of like, kill all humans. And then the people being on the other extreme of like, kill all the animals. Like,
yeah, because they even like, both sides want the forest spirit for different reasons. Mm-hmm. Like, so one person wants it to like live forever. The other just purely for like power or like for money.
Yeah.
And things like that. But then the animals, they want it to give them strength to eradicate the human race. And I'm just like,
hey, sexy mama, want to kill all humans?
The only one that actually comes out on top, if I think about it, is like the forest spirit, because he sends a message saying like, no, right. I'm not going to give you either.
Ashitaka's right.
Yeah, even though at this point, a lot of people, both people and animals have died.
Well, I think it's interesting that you bring it up, because I think when you boil it down, the animals and the people want the forest spirit for the exact same reason.
You're right.
Like, they want the forest spirit either, you know, to live forever in the way that they are, which is this like low-key threat of immortality for the Emperor, mm-hmm. or to have the power to, you know, best their enemies, whether that's animals or competing daimos in other regions. Whereas the animals, the same deal. It's like, we want this power. Because even among the animals, they show them fighting. Like, the wolves fight with the apes, fight with the boars, fight with the wolves. Like, and there's probably plenty more that we don't see. And it's just kind of like, they all rely on this forest spirit to kind of give them power to deal with this sort of back and forth. And even the, you even see the boars at the end, towards the end, they all rally together to, and they go feral and just go be an army to go kill the humans and ultimately lose. And the whole deal is like, they all lose because nobody has the forest spirit on their side, because that's not how it works.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah, Ashitaka's right.
He's absolutely right.
Whether he intentionally did or not. But yeah, I will say, I think it's really interesting that like San as a character is an interesting concept, how she's the foil to Lady Eboshi and vice versa. I gotta say that the way this ending hits, it just kind of bothers me. And maybe it's because of the dub. Maybe the music's different in the Japanese one. I don't know. But the way this movie ends, where it's like San's just like, I'm still gonna be a wolf, fuck you. Like, I'm gonna go live in the forest. And maybe Ashitaka will come visit. Like, I think that their weird romance thing is just, it's kind of weak.
It is, because it's very one-sided with, like, Ashitaka, like...
He's digging basically, her.
Yeah, he's digging her. And he's, like, you know, trying to save her from basically, like, destroying herself. And she could care less. Like, she's, like, willing to die for the forest.
Well, I think that's where the interesting... It's interesting because, like, she's starting to dig him, too.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not... She doesn't seem like she's understanding what's happening. Like, yeah. It's interesting because, I mean, I guess it makes sense. She's raised by wolves. But, like, she's digging on Ashitaka. And it doesn't seem like she understands that she likes him. Even at the end, it seems like she gets it, but she doesn't quite get it. And, like, I guess that's fine since you want to keep her the feral child that lives in the woods or whatever. But it's so strange to me that, like, everyone's kind of just like, we're gonna go back to what we were doing, but we'll try to be better about it. Like, that's yeah. I don't know, maybe you know, let me know what you think, Amber, because to me that's how the resolution of this film hits. It's like Ashitaka's like, I'm gonna go help the people of Irontown be better,
mm-hmm.
and Lady Boshi's like, I'm gonna try to be better, and like everyone's like, let's try to do better. Like, even San is like, I'm gonna try to keep the forest in check and stuff like that. And it's just like, but you're still going back to doing what you were doing before. Like, at what point does this just not come up to a head and form a cycle again?
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe it's just hope on his end for the future of humanity. Like, it seems really hopeful when you say that, because, you know, as humans are easily corrupt. Humans are, like, really greedy, are self-centered.
Right.
And so, yeah, you can have this, like, major thing happen, just like, you know, in our world today, we have COVID going on. But I'm sure once things go back to normal, are things really going to change?
Yeah, like, are things going to go to, like, let's be better than we were before all this? Or is it going to be, like, cool, we can go be shitty again, you know? Like, sneeze and cough in public without covering my mouth and it'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. But we've seen this in a lot of like other TV shows and movies where something catastrophic happens to the population, whether it's like a blip and everybody is gone and then comes back, you know, a couple of years later.
I am inevitable.
And they have to basically renormalize themselves. Like, as if they're coming back from war.
They have to,
like, integrate themselves within society. And the question is, like, are you really going to do anything about it? Or is it just going to be same old, like, we're going to be, you know, shit bags about things? Like, we're not going to make people's lives better. We're just going to continue, like, you know, having the people, the 1% at the top, just, like, basically taking everything, consuming everything,
mm-hmm.
whereas the people at the bottom are going to be, like, heavily affected.
Yeah, I think, and I mean, this movie definitely shows that point of, like, otherization as a constant, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, we're humans in their nature, but we're also the people of Irontown, and there's those fucks over there doing that other thing. Yeah. And then, you know, you have the Emperor is this completely separate thing. Billy Bob Thornton's character is a completely separate thing. And, like, they might overlap at times, but at the end of the day, they're not the same team.
Yeah.
You know, they might work together once, or even Ashitaka, they let him into Iron. It's not like he breaks into Irontown or something. They let him in, and he helps them, and they let him in, and they're cool, but he's never one of them. And I think that's such an interesting thing that this movie brings up, is that even the animals, like Gillian Anderson and the wolves in general are maybe the only ones that see San as like a wolf. Everyone else is just kind of like, it almost is like, I don't even know. It just kind of hits me like an awkward family gathering where everyone wants to say like, so-and-so's in an ugly sweater or that haircut sucks, but no one will dare say it. And that's what I feel like whenever the animals are like, interacting with San, or even the people when they're just like, oh, that's that girl. I'm a what? A wolf. You're a wolf. Wolf. Like, that's it, you know? And it's so strange, like, that's how it's approached. But it otherizes her. And I think this whole movie is a class case of how to otherize people and how animals otherize each other. So, Amber, one last question before we get to our usual last questions. You grew up with this movie and other animated Miyazaki films. If there's one thing that struck out to me about this film is that, like, it being a children's film is a little weird. Like, even the Blu-ray that we have rates it at PG-13. And, like, in my mind, that's fair enough. Like, you're literally watching people's heads get, like, ripped off and arms blown off by, like, arrows and shit.
Ah, it's just gonna be another goofy episode filled with silly jokes for kids.
As a kid, did that, like, phase you at all? Because I don't know, like, other Miyazaki films, I feel like, I mean, like, some maybe, but not all of them do that. Right, there's not that like gore kind of thing going on, and I found that jarring watching. It's not like, oh man, it's ruining the movie or something, but I'm just like, oh whoa, I was not expecting that man's head to come off, like, and it to be shown on screen. So like when you're looking at this movie and looking back on it, like, one, would you go, this is totally a kid's movie, or two, would you did that like phase you at all as a kid, like seeing it, did you even go whoa, like freak out or even get scared or something like that?
I definitely think it's not a kid movie. I think, yeah, especially with all of, like, the gore and stuff. Like, it's very different from all the other films, yeah, which have a lack of gore.
And blood. Now I'm thinking about it, there's a lot of, bloody scenes in this film.
And I don't know why, but I don't think it didn't faze me as much. Because maybe there were, because, like, I grew up with anime, basically. Like, right. That was my, like, cartoons, basically. Right. It was just watching, like, different animes. Nerd! And I think because I had already seen stuff that would be considered, like, you know, not okay for, like, a child to watch. But because, I don't know, I guess I always considered myself, like, super, like, mature. And so I kind of, like, understood at least like what was going on and like sort of why. Obviously, as you get older and you look back on things, you have a better understanding of it. But things like, you know, Paprika and like Perfect Blue and this movie, I think there's like a lot of commentary on it, and that a lot of like, I guess, animated American films, they don't like really do up until recently. So I would say like there's a lot more like recent animated like TV shows and movies that definitely like are almost on par with like if they were live action.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a sterilization of a lot of animated films that were coming out at the same time as this one. You know, I'm looking at, like, I mean, Lion King, Toy Story. Like, Lion King's actually a great example. Or Aladdin from earlier, where you're dealing with, like, someone dies and it's in a shadow, or it's cut when they fall, or, you know, the impact, the event of dying is, even though it's known, it's, like, not shown directly. Yeah. You don't see it. Whereas in this, you got our main hero of the movie, like, runs into battle on his deer and just shoots a man's head off. And it's like, there's not anything given to that. Like, there's no, like, what have I done? It's just like, that's what had to be. I shot his head off. Yep, it's moving on. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, or even like in Perfect Blue, where like you have this impersonator that's just wanting to kill her, yeah, like the main character, and just like stabbing her. And like even then, like at that very last scene where she bends over and a piece of glass pierces her stomach, and then she just like goes onto traffic and like basically gets killed. Like that was like pretty dramatic and pretty like extreme.
And I think it shows, because like I would by no means say Perfect Blue is a children's movie by any shape or form. And I think that's such an interesting thing, because it's using the medium of anime to tell a more mature story, right? And I think in this movie, most assuredly, I think in all of Miyazaki's films, like if you were to make any of them live action, so much would be lost just in the way it looks, let alone the fanciful things that you're able to do, as opposed to like making it look like a bunch of CGI glop, right? Like the entirety of the town in Spirited Away would just look like CGI goop. It would just be gray nothing, and it doesn't capture you the way, same way it does in the film. Whereas in this movie, the forest spirit thing would be this fucking horror show. It was exactly what it would be. It'd be terrifying. I think it would be far more terrifying than whimsical. But yeah, I don't think I'd call this movie a... I don't think there's a problem with a kid watching it, as long as the kid's old enough to understand some of what's going on. Like, in the sense of, like, don't burn down the forest for the sake of nothing, right? Like you know, nature's always right kind of type deal. But at the same time, like, I wouldn't be like, hey, you're five, you can handle it. Like, I think there's things in here that, like, as a girl, like, the forest spirit, I will still fucking hammer on about this. That shit's terrifying in my late 20s, okay? If I was 20 years younger, I'd have nightmares about that thing. Like, that shit's fucking scary.
You're a monster!
But yeah, I wouldn't call this a kid's movie, but I think a kid would enjoy it maybe even a little bit more than me, just because I might get too interpretive with it. Mm-hmm. But with that last question aside, one more final usual question. Amber, would you suggest that people, to put a bit of a spin on it, since we kind of already said watch it, would you suggest this movie to someone who does not and has never like watched an anime before? Like, if someone were to be like, I want to watch an anime film, would you say Princess Mononoke is the way to go into that?
Yeah, I definitely would. I think it's like the Hallmark like anime movies that people generally tell others to watch.
Yeah. And then out of 10, what are you rating this movie?
I think it's a 10 out of 10.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, it's, like, perfect. Besides, like, you know, the couple of things that are kind of ambiguous, like, especially the ending. But that's, like, part of his vision. So, generally, with his films, you never really know. Like,
yeah,
unless it's, you know, based on a novel or something. True, then he's just, you know, he's pretty true to what the novel or whatever says. But I think, like, with, you know, original stories like this, it's... Yeah, you know, within his vision, so.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. I guess I could... I didn't even think about my own answer before I asked the question, to be honest. As far as, like, suggesting this to someone who's never watched anime before, I think it's accessible in the fact that, unlike a lot of other anime, there's not as many tropes that are traditionally attributed to the style, and there's also... It's just more accessible, I think, in a Western sense. Like... If you can, and we even kind of fell in that trap for a little bit here, is like, if you can get your brain to turn off the, if it's a cartoon, it's for kids, then I think you'll enjoy. Really, I think that's kind of the rule with a lot of anime in general, is like, if you can turn off that part of your brain that's like, cartoons are for kids, and go into this as if it's a film, like, this is a film, the same as any other of its rating and style, like, you'll enjoy it. And I think it'll open you up to a lot of other kinds of film. You know, it was like we talked about, like, Perfect Blue and Paprika, which are fantastic movies, but they're totally not kids movies. Like, there's a maturity level there that, like, you need to have going into it, and you just wouldn't have if you were a kid. As far as a rating, I gotta, like, disagree with your 10 out of 10. I didn't think you'd give it a 10 out of 10, but I think I have to go more like, I get 8.7, I think.
Okay.
It's not that it's bad. There's like nothing wrong with this movie aside from some disturbing imagery, and like I guess really the thing that hits me the most is the dropped like subplots that are like presented and then thrown away to just hope that you remember later to kind of add to things, like the Emperor and the apes. Like the fact that every time I've watched this movie, I forget the apes exist. And then it's just like, oh yeah, the apes are like this other thing. I'm like, they don't really, I mean, were they there to make it not just the wolves versus the boars? Like, are they there as a third entity? Are they supposed to like symbolize something? And like, they kind of do, I guess you could interpret they do, but like, is it necessary that, like, don't I already get the point here? Like, the apes are like the shitty, envious nature part. Okay, fine, but it doesn't contribute much, you know? And then in terms of the Emperor being immortal, it's just kind of like a drive that I feel like Lady Eboshi could have just kind of done, right? Like, a kill the forest spirit for me and, like, puts out a thing. So, yeah, I think it's like an 8.7. But the movie, I mean, it's fantastically animated. The just everything about it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like all these movies, I think, because you said this is your favorite Ghibli movie, correct?
Yeah.
I think,
don't you dare,
I have to say I like the earlier Nausicaa and the Valley of the Winds better. Personally, I'm a sucker for that super far in the future Dune-esque dystopia stuff, so like that's really cool to me. But like, I think it kind of captured what it was like a less elaborate Princess Mononoke to me. Mm-hmm. Like, you kind of didn't have to deal with all the characters running around stuff. Like, you kind of have like this Nausicaa and then Patrick Stewart and a couple others and like the bad guys.
Yeah.
And then the bugs. And you get the same message with like less, but in a cool, in my opinion, a cooler setting that's a little bit more expansive.
Mm-hmm.
And also bleeds into our theory about the Miyazaki shared universe, which more on that another time. However, as I said at the beginning of this episode, can't believe I almost forgot. we're going to tell you guys like what we got planned for sort of the next month. So we're going to take a brief hiatus after this episode. So we're going to take like just this, the next week after this episode, you know, we're going to take that off. We just like need to chill for a minute. We're really working hard on like getting stuff together, so it's like we can make some more content. We can keep stuff consistent and everything. So we just need a break, 1 week, to give us 1 week to do that. Really appreciate it. But Amber, can you tell us what we got going on for the month of May?
So for the month of May, we're going to be doing a Mobster May.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
So all of the episodes that we're going to be doing are mobster movies.
Yep. So that's kind of what I was hinting at the beginning. You're getting a double dose of small screen, so you get a quadruple dose of main feed stuff over the course of the next month. Patrick's coming back for the whole deal. We are running 4 films, and I'm going to let you all know what those are right now instead of surprising at the end of each episode. But in order, those will be Goodfellas, Godfather 1, Godfather 2, and Eastern Promises. All of which I believe Patrick's already seen, but Amber and I have not. I've seen parts of Godfather 1 and 2 and parts of Goodfellas, but not enough to know what the hell any specific plot is going on in those films. And I never heard of Eastern Promises until Patrick suggested it. We might have some guests come on. We're working on that through the week. Also for some of those episodes, but get ready for that. We are diving into some mafioso movies and some not so mafia movies over the course of that month. It'll be fun. I think, you know, we really enjoy doing the theme months. We kind of learned after Star Trek that like it's really rewarding doing those things, and it just everyone always seems to have a good time, and it kind of keeps that thread going to where each episode doesn't feel so disjointed. So we're really looking forward to this one, and we hope you guys are too. But until we go ahead and organize ourselves for some crime, I am one of your hosts, Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And this is So What Happens Next, Small Screens. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks.